Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. The U.S. stock market recovered after a major plunge this Monday, reacting to Chinese stock values dropping. While the health of the U.S. economy has been much vaunted, Wall Street has disproportionately borne the fruits of a recovery. Even when the official unemployment rate falls, wages have remained depressed. Hours and benefits are stagnant, union representation is extremely low, and in general, ordinary Americans are still struggling to make ends meet. So what are the rest of us to make of the breathless news coverage of stock markets slumping and investors losing their billions? These are riches beyond our wildest dreams that have remained elusive for most of our lives. My guest, Sean McElwee, asks the important question in his recent article, "What if we reported on poverty the way we report on the stock market?" Sean McElwee is a research associate at Demos, and he now joins me. Welcome to Uprising.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, what sort of coverage have you seen of this latest market volatility? Are newspapers reporting it terribly seriously?
Well, I mean, just as I was getting off the train today, I got three notifications from, you know, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, all informing me, you know, that stocks are doing great today. And, you know, when there was the bloop in the market yesterday, there was, you know, breathless coverage. And I was just sitting at my desk, you know, on Twitter, and I'm seeing all of this coverage of this. And I'm like, I mean, this really only affects the, I mean, half of Americans don't even own stocks to begin with. But, I mean, stocks that are owned are very unequally divided. The 90% of them are owned by the small 10% of the population as the wealthiest. And white people tend to be far more likely to own stocks than people of color. So this story is really missing the lived and real experience of most Americans when they deal with the economy.
And so when people read the news, I mean, when I read the news, I don't have any direct investments in the stocks, but I'm sure my pensions, as modest as they are being invested. Ripple effect of the stock market crashing, as we've seen several years ago, can be pretty tremendous for everybody. But in the direct, throes of values dropping, what goes through people's minds? When I look at these news articles, I think to myself, should I be worried? What am I supposed to do? You feel completely out of control because you weren't part of the problem or part of the game, the part of the system to begin with.
I mean, there's the joke that you know, stock market has predicted 9 of the last 5 recessions. So in this case, it's clear, you know, as of now, it looks like there's not going to be a recession coming from this stock market fall. But yeah, my really deep problem with the way the media reports on stock market is pretending like how, you know, 500 large cap companies in the case of S&P or even smaller group in the case of the Dow are doing is a proxy for how Americans are doing. And I think this goes even deeper than the stock market. I mean, we say, oh, look at the unemployment rate as a proxy for all Americans. Well, as I note in my article, you know, white Americans face a very different unemployment than black Americans. And rich Americans face a very different unemployment rate than poor Americans. And if you're black and not rich and you don't have a college education, you face a very, very different unemployment rate than other Americans. When we talk about the economy, if we don't kind of get into more detail and really look at these racial divides and these class divides and these gender divides and the numbers that we're talking about, we're really not telling the full story of the economy.
Right. And, you know, the photos of the Wall Street traders and the Chinese traders looking aghast and pale, their head in their hands as they stare at a board full of lights that make, you know, little sense to us, are meant to evoke sympathy in the media. But these are folks who chose to make their money by gambling. Shouldn't we see them as gamblers who've simply lost?
Oh, I mean, I'd be totally fine with not talking about them at all. You know, it's like, I mean, there are a very small portion of people who actively trade on the stock market. Most smart people buy and hold. Most people who own stocks, I'm imagining, are passive investors. Most of these stories are aimed at saying the Dow Jones is down today. That means the economy is down today. That means we're all down today. And that actually creates really systemic biases, right? Because what it does is it tells people in the middle class, if rich people are doing well, then you're doing well. And if poor people are doing, or, and, you know, rich people are doing badly, you're not doing well. But the reality is that, you know, the rich could be doing awful, and, you know, it's never happened, but the middle class could be growing. And so one of the things that I wrote about in an earlier piece that I discussed in this one is the work of Larry Bartels. And what he shows is that when middle-class people and low-income people go to vote, they're actually more sensitive to the economic growth and the wage growth of wealthy people than they are to their own.
Wow, and that's because of these...
I posit for that being a reality is because the media primarily reports on things that affect the wage growth of the wealthy.
And so the psychology of why news media report news the way they do is, I think, important for us to probe as well. You point out in your piece that the people who primarily staff our newsrooms have some demographic overlap with investors and traders, and that's part of it, right?
Yeah. So the first part of the problem is that you have the newsroom, the newsrooms are in cities overwhelmingly, and the people who can get jobs in media tend to be slightly whiter and slightly richer background than the median American. That's not to say there are not non-white people, there are not people who have, you know, background that's more modest in the newsroom. They certainly are. But on average, the people who are going to be able to afford to live in a city at a very sub, you know, standard salary are people who have some sort of means behind them that they can fall back onto. And so those people's lived experiences are going to be different than those experiences of a lot of Americans. And they're also reaching an audience that is different, probably, than average Americans. But I think that they do have an obligation, you know, to report on issues that matter. I mean, the reality is there are a lot of Americans today who are unbanked and underbanked and do not rely on, you know, the stock market or banks to protect their financial assets, but on payday lending. There are a lot of people who are literally paying for furniture in payments, and it ends up inflating the cost of the furniture by, you know, 50% or even double. A lot of people don't know about these stories. A lot of people don't know that banks are buying up houses and then renting them to people so that the American dream of homeownership is further and further away. I'd love it if there was more coverage of those things.
And imagine, as you ask the question in your article, if newspapers, if the media did cover issues of poverty in the same way that they covered market volatility, that, you know, unemployment, for example, going up by a percent to be taken as at least as important as the Dow Jones falling by a few percent. You know, where are the photographs of ordinary people with their head in their hands, you know, who've been trying to get jobs and can't, or who've been trying to make ends meet with the low-paying jobs that they have but can't. We see those occasionally, but not in the same sort of, as we've said, breathless way that the stock market is covered.
Right. And also interesting to me is, like, okay, unemployment is up a point. How does that break down by race? You know, because you could have the employment, you know, dropping, you know, on the whole. But you could have an entire group of people, say African Americans, who are not seeing the benefits of the recovery. And so, I mean, like, the fact that, you know, our cities are resegregating before our eyes, and it's getting less coverage than, you know, a temporary dip in the stock market. The fact that African American women and Latino women have, you know, a penny in wealth for every dollar the white man has. These are real problems, and they suggest that structurally within the economy, the benefits that we're seeing in lower unemployment or higher stock market are accruing to a very, very small sliver of the population.
And I'm so glad you're bringing these issues up, the fact that there is such marked racial and gender difference in income. This kind of undermines that conservative retort to Black Lives Matter that goes, all lives matter. If all lives did matter, of course, we would see far more equality in wages among races and genders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Because, I mean, the assets, for example, even that, so white people are far more likely to have large shares of their assets held in the stock market. And African American and Latino households, most of their assets actually are in their home. And so if you want to understand the 2007 crisis, you have to understand that for like African-American Latinos, this has been far, far more hard to get out of because of how much home ownership is a hit. And many of these households still haven't recovered. And so, you know, if the coverage of the news was sort of as centered on people of color as it is on white people, then, you know, you would see every day, what's the Case-Shiller home index doing? Because that's the asset that really matters to people of color, whereas the stock market is, you know, more likely to matter to white people. So, yeah, these are really deep biases that unless, you know, we're constantly pointing them out and constantly getting on newspapers, they're not going to change because they use the availability heuristic. What is near me? What is the experience of the people that I know? I mean, that's why you see so many articles on Uber. You know, if you go to a lot of places, people don't even know what Uber is or, you know, rarely heard of it. They're much more worried about, you know, getting food on their table. But journalists see, oh, Uber, this is a big deal. Everyone I know is using Uber. But everyone you know is not everyone in the United States.
And
or
this,
the world for that.
This is also part of how we saw coverage after the 2008 recession, when there were a lot of white middle class folks who lost their homes and joined the ranks of the unemployed, and news media reported it as if it was something that had just now begun to affect middle class Americans. But it was affecting many Americans, you know, well before the recession, just not necessarily as much affecting white Americans as it did after the recession.
Yeah, so one of the things that I briefly talk about in the piece, I'm actually hoping to write even longer on this because it's a great study by Martin Gillens. It's old, but old studies can still be really good. And what he does is he looks at, okay, when media portrays people in poverty, how do they do it? And so you have lots of different groups in poverty. The most sympathetic are probably elderly people, right? Or, you know, these are people in poverty who, it's elderly people and children. We feel really bad about it. Whereas people in poverty that are working age adult men, a lot of people don't feel as bad when they're in poverty. You know, they blame these people for the poverty. It's not right, but that's what happens. So Gillen says, okay, when older people and younger children are portrayed in poverty, what color is their skin? It's overwhelmingly white people. He says, okay, now when unemployed working age adult men are in poverty, what color is their skin? Finds now it's overwhelmingly black people, right? When you have people who are, you know, on the dole, it's always black people. But when you have elderly people who are, you know, suffering hardship from the economy, it's always white people. And I mean, just the fact that more and more people of color are the norm in terms of who is portrayed as using these social programs, what he finds is that this can actually be directly tied to Americans disliking a lot of social programs, is the way that media have portrayed people on these programs. They've racialized the issue, and that's actually undermined support for that. Now, I'm sure, absolutely sure, if you went to a newspaper editor and you showed them these data, they would. There's no way they'd believe it. A lot of these people probably vote Democratic, and they consider themselves to be liberal, but this is a very real thing that is happening. And unless, you know, the facts are put right in front of their face, they're never going to believe, because they believe that they're good people. And most of them are good people. But what they're doing is very, very bad.
And let me just reiterate, the study you're referring to is by Martin Gillens, G-I-L-E-N-S, that our audience can look up. It was in the early 1990s, and you write in your article, quote, the media were far more likely to show African-Americans when discussing the least sympathetic people in poverty, and whites when discussing the most sympathetic poor. And so it would certainly be interesting to do a more updated study, and we'd love to have you back on if you do find one like that or conduct one yourself. And I'm wondering also, now, if you think that as we're going forward, as we see more and more people of color-led movements for income equality, like the Fight for 15 campaign, that do get some media coverage, that we might start to see perceptions change? I mean, what do you make, for example, of the media coverage of the mostly people of color-led Fight for 15 campaigns?
I'm excited to see more campaigns. you know, Demos has done a lot of research, I think, that really support the arguments of people who are in the Fight for 15 campaign, arguments like, if you pay workers more money, then they have more money to spend, and that's good for the economy. And I'm really excited to see more and more movements gaining more and more coverage. And I think that what you really have with social media is you have an immediate way to call out a major organization when they mess up. Like when there was the instance after Ferguson where they said that the New York Times said Michael Brown is no angel, right? And it was immediate, the reaction, and it was very strong. There was recently a case where they called the New York Times, again, it was in an obituary, and it mentioned one of the person's great-grandparents had been a slave, and she had been raped by her master, and they said that she was the master's mistress. And Sean King wrote a great op-ed on why that's entirely inappropriate. And so you're seeing more and more really critical coverage of the mainstream media on race, and you're seeing more and more young writers who work in more diverse newsrooms who are really much more in touch with how to write about these issues and about them well. And so I'm optimistic that we're going to see better coverage. But we have to, you know, keep on these organizations.
Thank you so much, Sean, for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article from our website, uprisingwithsonali.com. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Sean McElwee is a research associate at Demos, and his article is entitled, What If We Reported on Poverty the Way We Report on the Stock Market? We'll be right back after this break.